Welcome back to Copper Country Today. I'm your host, Rick Allen. Joining me on the line right now is Jill Rivak. Jill is doing some research for a book that she's writing involving a 29-year-old cold case, a missing persons case of Rose Peterson. Jill is on the line right now. Jill, thank you for coming on the program.
Thank you for having me.
Now, let me start a little bit with some background here for, you know, since this is a pretty old missing persons case, there's going to be a lot of people in the area who aren't familiar with this. Can you tell me a little bit about Rose?
Sure. Rose Peterson, she was 41 years old at the time she disappeared, and she disappeared in 1989, so it has been 29 years. She is from Hancock originally, and at the time of her disappearance, she was living temporarily in Calumet.
Tell me a little bit about Rose around the community.
Rose came from a larger family. She graduated from Hancock High School in 1967, and she worked actually for many years at the Houghton County Medical Care Facility. And she was a shy, kind of introvert person, but very friendly. She wasn't super social, so many people didn't know about her disappearance because she wasn't really out in the public a lot. She was a very kind of to herself person.
So what happened in 1989?
So in 1989, she was living at it's called Westside. It was a adult foster care home, basically, for adults who were kind of struggling on their own, and they could stay there for a certain amount of time. And so she was only there for probably a day or two, and she went with a employee at the house to that employee's home, which was nearby, and they walked to this home, and they were going to have lunch at the employee's home, which was common. They could take the adults out to do other things and go on, field trips and stuff like that. And so when this person was making lunch, Rose disappeared from her home. And that was off of Caledonia Street in Calumet.
Oh, interesting. I live on Caledonia Street in Calumet right now.
Oh, you're kidding.
No, I am not.
Wow.
Are you familiar with that area? Have you visited that area?
I have visited the area, and I've done some, I did a lot of driving around. I was there in August. I'm not from the area. I live in Minnesota, so I don't exactly know. I am going to be visiting this summer and really doing kind of more driving and picture taking of areas she would have, been around that time. But so I'm not super familiar with like Caledonia Street.
Okay. Because my next question just would have been, do you know if this took place on the side of the town where you might find horses and chickens, or where the side of town that you wouldn't? People that live on Caledonia Street would be able to identify that. The northern end of the street is more rural.
Right. That's a good question. As of right now, I don't have that answer.
Okay. That's fine.
I believe it wouldn't be more out in the rural. It was closer to town, probably. Okay. That's what I'm thinking, right. From what I've heard from people. And I have looked at it on Google Maps and stuff like that. And I know she was last seen actually walking, supposedly on US 41. So we're not sure which direction she went when she walked away from the home on Caledonia Street.
So the story goes that they were going to have lunch, and while lunch was being prepared, she then apparently left the residence.
Correct. Okay. And the employee did not see her leave. She doesn't know which direction she went. And I believe there were two other adults there who were staying at Westside that didn't know where Rose went off to.
Was there any speculation into why she would have left?
I know she had prior issues with alcohol and mental health issues, but I don't believe she liked staying at these places. So her family's take is that she maybe just wanted to get home. She wanted to get home to Hancock. And Rose didn't have a driver's license, so her mode of transportation would be walking. So it wasn't uncommon for her to walk miles and miles to get somewhere. So she probably left and started walking toward Hancock.
Yeah, that would have been quite a walk. It would have been. Yeah. You mentioned that it had been a little while before she was considered missing.
Well, the employee called the mental health department and told them that she was missing. So it was reported, and they did check up on it. Police and everything did search the Caledonia Street area, and they didn't find anything. So there were really no leads to where to guide the police to look. All they knew is that there were witnesses who saw her on 41 and saw her walking towards Hancock.
Do you know about...
Yeah, sorry.
Oh, I just asked, do you know whereabouts on 41 in that long, you know, it's between Calumet and Hancock's about a 12-mile stretch.
Right. It was near the airport road that she was last seen.
Okay. Well, talk to me about those days following her coming up missing, and was there an extensive search done?
I wouldn't say extensive. I mean, I know the police did search certain areas and spoke to family members and did search her mother's house in Hancock, where she tended to stay at. Her mother actually had a stroke and was in a hospital at the time, so her mother's home was vacant, but she would often stay there, and they did search that area. They did do some dog and aerial searches, but they didn't find anything. They didn't find her clothing, nothing. And there were rumors that she was hitchhiking, but her family said that she would never hitchhike. That just wasn't like her. She would maybe take a ride from somebody she knew, or she would just walk, and she would have walked miles upon miles. And it, you know, so it wasn't unlike her to walk that distance, even though it was a very long way.
What time of year, what season did this disappearance take place?
This was July. July 28th, 1989 is the actual date she's reported missing. And that's the last date supposedly people saw her on US 41. Now, she left the house on Caledonia Street around noon. So we're not sure exactly, you know, how long it would have taken her to get to that airport road. There was an anonymous phone call to her sister, Jane, who actually helped raise her son after Rose went missing, that somebody saw her being picked up in a brown car. But that person didn't leave their name or any other information, so we can't confirm it either way if that was true.
Did any of these leads like those or results from some of the search ever turn up, you know, any clues at all as to her whereabouts?
No, really. I mean, the case has gone, it went just cold, basically. There was nothing to go off of. They didn't know if she had, you know, committed suicide, which her family, they don't think she did. If she would have, it would have been somewhere where they could have found her body. And I've spoken to the mine inspector with Houghton County, and he does not believe it is likely that she would have fallen in a mine shaft. Most of those were sealed at the time, and they would be very visible, the ones that she was near. She was also wasn't the type of person to wander out in the woods and get lost. So really, the family suspects possibly foul play, that she was probably picked up by somebody and, you know, somebody harmed her and disposed of her body somewhere.
But as far as suspects, really nobody with any kind of, you know, strong suspicions that they may be the one.
Nope. There was a man interviewed back in 94 about he had spoken to somebody in his apartment about a woman named Rose, and he had a watch, and he knew, like, the Boston area very well. But they interviewed him, and supposedly he was talking about a different Rose, and And he has since he's passed away. He's deceased now. So our only other option and kind of scenario we're looking at is serial killer David Goodrow, who was living in the area at the time of her disappearance.
Is there anything that would have connected him to Rose, or is that just because he was here?
Well, there were speculations that she was on Social Security and he worked at the Social Security office, but I haven't confirmed yet if she was on, as far as I know, the police think that she was not on Social Security. She was on assistance from social services. So, you know, I'm not sure if there's a connection there. If she would have, you know, known David Goodrow, or if he was in the area around the time of her disappearance and could have seen her as an easy target. But that is something I have to look into, just because he was in the area around that time.
What became of him?
He is serving a life sentence in the Saginaw Correctional Facility downstate.
Okay. So, Jill, what brought you to be involved in this particular case?
Mainly because my mother grew up in Hancock, and my mom, when I was researching podcasting for my novel, now my novel is fictional, so it's not actually based on Rose's disappearance, but it's given me inspiration for my story. And so my mother has always spoken about Rose. She knew her as Rosie Roberts. That was her maiden name. And she said they never found Rose, and she knew of her and her family, and it's always bothered her that nobody ever found her and the family doesn't have closure. And so when I decided to research for my novel and do a podcast, I chose Rose's case to look into.
Now, researching a case like Rose and just having some connection to this area, we have a number of missing person cases. This is not unique in any way.
Correct. Right. There are many missing people.
Did you consider any other cases besides this one, as you know, knowing the different ones that took place?
I really didn't look at any other cases. I mean, I've looked since I've been researching Rose's, I've looked into other cases, but I really wanted to focus on hers because it was such an old case. And I figured if somebody doesn't look at it now, it will never be looked at. And, you know, her family would love closure. I mean, she only has two living siblings left. So, you know, her mother passed away not knowing what happened to her daughter, and her sisters died not knowing. And, you know, she has a brother and a sister still living, and then her son is still living. And he's in his 40s, and so he's, you know, he's been affected by this his entire life, and he would like closure to know what happened to his mom.
Sure, I can't imagine dealing with something like that. I have a daughter myself, and not knowing, you know, what you know would have happened to your child, and of course your mind's going to fill in everything, you know, and none of them are good scenarios in that particular case.
Yeah, and that's why I think I was drawn to Rose's case, because she was somebody who wouldn't make national news. She was somebody who had struggles in life. She had issues with alcohol and mental health, and, you know, trouble living on her own. She had a slight intellectual disability, so she struggled with being, she was married at one point but divorced, and so she struggled with being a single mother. And so I think that's what drew me to her, because I feel like she was a bit forgotten, and I wanted to bring her case and kind of bring a voice to her out to the public and get the community involved. And maybe, just by chance, somebody knows something about her disappearance and will come forward with information.
Have you had conversations with her kid?
Yes, I have. I've spoken to her son, and he does not want his voice on the podcast, which I respect. But I've spoken to him, and he's been very forthcoming about all the information he has regarding her disappearance. And, you know, I think this has really traumatized him his whole life. You know, it's really affected him. And I know it's hard for him to hear about the podcast, you know, out in the world he's living in and at work and stuff like that. I'm sure it's really hard to hear it because he would rather stay private. But he is grateful that I am looking into her case, and he's hoping we can get to a conclusion. I mean, we're realistic that Rose is probably deceased, but she deserves to be found and have a proper burial and the family to have closure.
Talking to people from this area, and as we were discussing a moment ago, that there are a lot of unsolved missing person cases that take place in our area. It can really make you scratch your head sometimes just how the frequency we have of cases like these. Do you have any insight from the people that you've talked to as to why that might be? Of course, I know that, you know, if you do have the answer, there are going to be a lot of people who would love to be able to interview you to find out why that is the case. But, am I correct, at least from, people that you may have talked to, that there is that feeling in this area that, boy, a lot, for such a small area, there is an unusually high number of missing person cases. We tend to get at least one a year, sometimes more.
Correct. Yeah. I mean, it's really sad to think about all the missing people out there that haven't been found. And I listen to many podcasts doing the same thing I'm doing, looking into cold cases. My only thought would be that people are tight-lipped about it. They don't want to talk about what they see or what they hear. And that's the most important thing that people can do, the community, to speak out of what they see, to go to the police if they see something. If somebody tells them information, even if they don't believe that person, really take it to heart because it could be the link that solves the case. And so I think that's what I'm reaching for. And I thank you for having me on your show and getting the word out to people, because you never know. Somebody might know something even after 29 years, and that could bring closure to the family.
Well, yeah, I'm happy to talk to you about it. And, if anybody does have any information at all, we ask that they, would contact, their local police department first, because that's where, these things start.
Right.
And did you have a chance to talk with local law enforcement? I know, not many of them would have been around 29 years ago, but still, were they aware of this particular case?
Yes. Yeah, actually, the police have been very, very helpful. I have spoken to like Hancock and Houghton County, and then I also have spoken to the detective on Rose's case, is Detective Briala with the Michigan State Police, and he has been very helpful, and we'll email back and forth, and he can't give me a ton of information because now the case is actually considered active because he is following up on some information in it. Oh. And I do believe the podcast has helped that kind of bring forth some interest in it. And so I'm hopeful that maybe he'll be able to find some answers for us.
Well, that's kind of a big thing there, Jill, that, for a case that's been so, so dormant for so long. And you're saying that just recently that there's been some interest, at least since you've been doing this podcast. And, if there is any information that could lead to, solving this particular case, and I know that there's the family of Rose would be, grateful not only to you, but to the law enforcement and to the person that had that information that came forward with it.
Yeah, and everybody, I will say, everybody in the community around there has been wonderful. I've had many people reach out to me saying, what can I do to help? I've had people like doing kind of side investigating for me just to help out. And people really do care. They really care about Rose. They want to find her. They want closure for the family. And the police do too. And I know Detective Ryla is a very, he's a wonderful detective. And I believe he'll, help us find some answers.
With this information, what do you intend to do with it? You said you were writing a book.
Yes. My book is fictional. So my book is about a murder case that was never solved, and my main protagonist is a podcaster, kind of going incognito as a podcaster. And so that's what kind of brought forth this research into the podcasting world. I'm a novice at it. I'm learning as I go. So I have to kind of, I'm buying new equipment, kind of upping the game, making my sound sound better. And I just finished season one, and I'll be releasing season two of Leap in the Dark, probably in April.
Now, help me out here. What's the relation between podcasting and writing a novel?
They kind of play a similar role. You're kind of creating a story, and you have to kind of reach the audience. So in a way, they kind of are very similar. And it's been very helpful to see what an actual podcaster does to write about one, because then I know, you know, what the actual work goes into doing one. And I've really enjoyed it, and I feel, you know, blessed that the family has been really helpful with me, and I've been able to be in contact with them. And I feel like, you know, I can maybe try to help them in some way and give them the closure they need, at least try, and then they feel like, you know, somebody actually tried to help us.
But a podcast is, you're recording your voice, right? You're speaking. Are you reading what you have written, or are you talking sort of off the top of your head?
Some of the stuff I write beforehand, if it's like an intro. So I'll type up an intro, which is, you know, similar to just writing, you know, my book, where, except that this is real life and not fiction. And then I do recordings. So I play recordings of people I've interviewed. And so it's kind of a mixture of both. So I do a little bit of writing in my podcast, and then I produce it, interview, and do the whole thing.
Will it eventually be a like in book form? Is it, you know, something you would buy at a store?
No, my podcast won't be. I mean, maybe eventually I'll do a book on Rose Peterson's disappearance. But for now, the podcast is just, you know, basically a way of people learning about her investigation. Now my book, on the other hand, I hope one day will be in book form and available to everybody, but of course it's fiction. It's loosely based on everything I'm learning in my investigation.
If people want to follow your podcast, how do they do that?
They could go to leapinthedarkpodcast.com. I'm also on Facebook, Leap in the Dark Podcast, and Instagram as well. And then they can find Leap in the Dark on iTunes and SoundCloud, and they can listen to, I have all 11 episodes on both iTunes and SoundCloud.
Now, you said you described yourself as a novice at doing this, but have you done anything similar like this before?
Nope. I'm definitely a newbie podcaster. Never done this. I'm actually a hairstylist by trade, and I became interested in writing. I've been writing for years, and I'm very interested in podcasts and have listened to many of them, and that's kind of where I got the idea for my novel I'm writing now and to do Rose Peterson's investigation.
Well, it certainly is a alternative form of literature, you know, use that term for it, because, of course I know about writing and, you know, whether it, you know, writing in books, short stories, or even those that like poetry or writing music. And I talk for a living, obviously, on radio, but so you've kind of merged both of them and, you know, using it as a literary art form.
Right. Yeah. And it's been really fun, and I've enjoyed it. And it gets daunting at times because it's really hard to investigate a 29-year-old cold case. I didn't realize how much work was going to be put into it. But it's a full-time job, but that I'm not getting paid for. but I enjoy it. And I really care about the family, and I really care about Rose, even though I never met her, and would love to find closure for the family. So
now, do you have an ending in mind already for your podcast, your fictional story that you're telling?
I do. I do have an ending for my novel already. But of course with Rose's, you know, we don't know. I mean, I'm hoping, you know, with her investigation, we'll find the answers. The conclusion with my podcast is to find her remains and be able to bring the closure to her family.
Is your current project still being influenced by things that you learned with the Rose Peterson case?
Oh, yes, most definitely. And, you know, as I research Rose's case, it's kind of brought me to other cases that are out there right now that have given me inspiration for my book. And it's been a lot of help. And also, it's been encouraging to do something that can actually help people. And it's making a difference to her family, and that means a lot to me.
And what's next for you once this is all done?
Well, I need to finish my novel. I've been spending most of my time on the podcast, and I'm going to continue to investigate for the podcast. And in the meantime, I'm writing my novel, and then when I'm done with Rose's case, and hopefully we have a conclusion, then I might do another case that's out there.
Jill Rivack, she has a podcast and working on a novel involving the disappearance of Rose Peterson, a 29-year-old cold case. And see if I have wrote this down correctly. You said leapinthedarkpodcast.com, correct?
Correct.
All right. So invite people to check that out. Jill, thanks so much.
Thank you.
Cover Country Today, we'll be right back.